Hello, good afternoon. Welcome back to Health Through Mental Health, El Infierno de la Salud Mental. We are going to have today a special guest. We are waiting for her to get connected. Hello. There she is.
Hey. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Awesome.
How are you?
I'm doing well this Friday. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you very much for joining this podcast, Health Through Mental Health, El Infierno de la Salud Mental. It's great to have you with us today. And do you want to introduce yourself or do you want to remain anonymous?
Yeah, I'll introduce myself. So my name is Nidia Bermudez. I am Colombian. I was born in Colombia, but I have been living here for 20 years, and I am currently a mental health therapist, social worker first and therapist second.
Okay, great. Well, that's wonderful. Nidia, I hope you have had a chance to listen to some of the episodes that we had before. And how we are trying to create awareness about mental health conditions, to kind of turn down some barriers or stigmas about mental health conditions. Yes. In society. But I want to start by asking you, what happened to you? What kind of mental condition did you have?
Yes. So basically, I was one of those rare cases. So I started off at 15. I started having panic attacks. I remember I was in high school. I was in ninth grade and I was a freshman, but I was in the program called International Bachelorette. It was a heavy, intense program at my school, my high school. And so I had a lot of heavy classes. I was taking college prep, all that. So I just had a lot of stressors. And during this time, I started experiencing anxiety, panic attacks, high moments of stress. So then I saw my counselor at school, and from then on, that's when I was taken to see a doctor, a psychiatrist. My father took me, concerned, and that's when I was diagnosed with anxiety. After that, we started seeing that it wasn't just anxiety, but my psychiatrist, who actually he was a very great psychiatrist, Dr. Lelio, I still remember his name. I saw him all the way till I was 19 years old, and he diagnosed me with bipolar 1. A mental health condition that basically has to do with extreme shifts between manic emotional states and depressive states. And so I just experienced a lot of mood swings, mania, and what mania basically is, just to break it down in logical terms, would be high moments of energy where you become kind of impulsive, you don't sleep, it becomes uncontrollable. And the thing about mania is that it usually comes to a harsh stop point and you break down and you suffer from depression. So that is basically, you know, when you talk about mental health conditions, you talk about, you know, bipolar is one being one of the heavy ones, and then even, you know, heavier would be schizophrenia. But with me, I never experienced any psychosis. I was just, the diagnosis I was given was bipolar 1, and the difference, just to do some psychoeducation between bipolar 1 and 2, is that bipolar 1 has more focus on the mania, and you do have depression, but you have more manic episodes. Bipolar 2 is you do have hypomania, which is a less intense of high energy moments, but you have more depression, if that makes sense.
It is a lot. I mean, yes. Anxiety by mm-hmm. being bipolar, depression. Mm-hmm. And yes. Did you suffer from insomnia as well?
When I was manic, yes. I remember in college and I had college roommates, and it was very difficult because I couldn't sleep, right? So it was, it caused some friction, and, you know, they were very supportive at that time, but I also understood when it came to like falling out, right? I had friendships that fell out that were 10 plus years, so I lost support systems, but I have come to understand that it was all in its timing. It was something that they had to do to also make sure they were succeeding in school, you know, things like that.
Did you get enough support from school, from your professors?
Yes.
And other people involved in your education?
Yeah. So basically when I was in high school, that's when I had the onset of all that, the anxiety and the bipolar diagnosis. I had very supportive friends that I'm still friends with to this day, my best friends. And then when I was in, so I have been in remission. I would like to say I've been in remission for 8 years. So I haven't had a manic or depressive state in 8 years. So that's a really rare case, and it usually doesn't happen. You usually have a lot of manic episodes, it cycles. But based on what I have found, my treatment therapy and my treatment, my medications, which I'll get into later, those have been effective in allowing me to have a stable life. I work full time. I have a healthy family. I have healthy relationships. I have a healthy, you know, I have a, you know, normal life. And so it does require sacrifice, but I've always had support. But when I had, when I was experiencing the other manic episode I had wasn't when I was, you know, I was a fresh sophomore in college, and I did have support specifically from your wife. I worked with her and she really helped me, you know, get back to my work study, and like my friends helped me really get back to school and motivation. But I won't say that I didn't come with barriers. I was told, like, from actually from the time that I was hospitalized, because I did experience, you know, I was hospitalized because it got to the point where my parents didn't know how to help me because of the mania. It wasn't so much like I didn't have suicidal thoughts. I never have experienced that kind of depression, but I did have more mania where I was just not sleeping, skipping classes. And that's not like me. If you know me, you know, I'm very scholastic. So my parents were like, something isn't right. We have to go. And for me, the hospitalization, and I'm sure that with a lot of, you know, clients I see, it can be very traumatizing, that experience. And for me, it was a little bit, because the way that it happened was that I was taken basically, and a cop came, right? Because I didn't want to go, right? And that's the procedure. Mm-hmm. But the way that it happened was, you know, they handcuffed me and my neighbor saw me like criminal, you know, they took me and put me in the cop car. And so it was very traumatizing.
Wait, what happened?
When I was taken to the hospital when I was 19, I didn't want to go, right? So my parents obviously had to take, they had to take into account that I needed to help. And so I had to be involuntarily committed. The police came and they took me and they handcuffed me and put me in a cop car and took me to the hospital. So this was, you know, the mental health system still has a lot of work to be done, but this was definitely something that was traumatizing in my story. And when I was actually in the cop car, the police woman, she was like, you know what, you're actually fine. Let me put some music on and let's take you to the hospital. You're not harmful. You're not. And I know it's procedure, but it was still very traumatizing. Right.
Yeah. I can imagine. Yeah. So by going what you're saying, mm-hmm. it seems that you had a lot of support in terms of family.
Yes.
Friends.
Yes.
Doctors, clinics.
Yes. Yes.
So you didn't feel at any point like no one was listening to you?
Yeah, no, I didn't, especially because my family, so my dad's a doctor in my country, my mom is a psychologist. So they're very well educated on like mental health and like, you know, care. So they've always been very supportive, and they were the ones that helped me get back in school because I had missed, you know, imagine sophomore year of college, I was trying to get into my undergrad division of social work, you have to be accepted, and I had missed literally like a month of classes. To make up a month of classes in college is not easy. And so I did have a lot of help from the dean of students. They allowed me to turn things in late. You know, UNC Charlotte was a really supportive, I went to UNC Charlotte, and I was really supportive and helpful in me actually finishing my degree. And not only that, but I went ahead and did my master's too. So when I, now I'm a therapist, so I overcame a lot, and I was told, you know, I just remember that, you know, the people that told me like, you'll never do it. Your diagnosis is too heavy. You'll never overcome anything. You'll never find the right medication. You need to quit. You need to just live at home with your parents. But my parents always were like, no, you can do it. You can do it. We're going to get it right. My siblings were huge, huge anchors. I have the oldest. And so that was another part, as the oldest sibling going through this and seeing your siblings suffer, you know, trying to understand what's happening. That was something that I've also processed in healing and therapy. Right.
Okay, it's interesting that you're saying that another sibling mm-hmm. Is going through this. Mm-hmm. So is that kind of genetic in your family?
So basically, you know, like when it comes to genetics, you know, bipolar has genetic tendency sometimes. So based on my culture and my family, you know, it's not really talked about. You know, in Colombia, we don't really talk about mental health. But I did come to know that possibly, you know, my grandmother does have bipolar, but it's not really something that's discussed openly.
Right. Yeah.
But it really helped me when I found out about that, because I was like, where is this coming from? Right. And it kind of gave me some form of closure and finding out that, you know, it wasn't just out of thin air. Like, my grandma is someone who has suffered from highs and lows her whole life, right?
Okay. Well, I was just mentioning this because mm-hmm. we have seen that, and you already know this, mental health conditions can attack anyone at any time, yes. regardless of age or gender or religion or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you realize that you were going through something when you were 15, right? Is that what you said?
Yes, and usually this diagnosis doesn't come until the client or the patient is like 20. So I was one of the rare for bipolar. So I was usually you don't see a lot of children being diagnosed with bipolar disorder, but I was one of those rare cases. And thanks to my psychiatrist at that time, Dr. Lilly, the other one I keep mentioning, he was able to get me on, you know, help me and get me, you know, stabilized.
Okay.
And that's one of the, that's one of the reasons that even now when I see my psychiatrist, she's like, that's one of the reasons because we detected it earlier, you're more stable, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it is great that you had the support at home from your parents who, they are well educated and they knew what was going on with you. Mm-hmm. But other kids, other young people, they don't go through the same kind of support. What right. happened with kind of, did you have to face some kind of stigma at school, at work?
In
society in general?
Of course, you know, it's not something like just coming on this podcast was a big decision for me because it was like, this is the first time where I'm actually like, speaking and I feel safe speaking, you know, it's a safe space. But basically, like in my career, no one really knows about it, right? Just my personal close circle of friends and family, you know, because as a mental health clinician, it's something that, you know, carries stigma, right? But it also allows, you know, the reason I'm sharing is because a lot of people that can hear this can empathize and see like, wow, like you have empathy because you've been through something similar, right?
Yeah.
So I faced a lot of stigma. And like when I came back, one of the side effects like out of the hospital was like I gained a lot of weight, right? Because mm-hmm. of medication, like trying to see what medication fit for me. And so because of that, people were like, why was she gone so long? You know, like, and like, especially like something about my where I was raised in an environment of faith, right? So my mom is a very faith-based person, and something I recognized was a lot of pushback from, you know, the religious community, the faith community, like God's gonna heal you, right? And I recognize that now, but at the same time, it wasn't a space of as much support. It was a space of, you know, you're fine, right?
In that aspect. I don't know if you had the chance to listen to one of the episodes where we talk about religion and how religion can affect people with mental health conditions because they, I won't generalize or anything like that, but some people in certain religions, they make people believe that there's something wrong with their souls and that they have to pray and that they are praying some kind of sin that they, something really bad. And instead of helping out, mm-hmm. they are just creating more stigma. Yes. And I'm blaming the victim here. So how do you see your Colombian Latin American culture in terms of dealing with the kind of mental conditions that we go through?
Right. So it was very challenging, right? First of all, because of the stigma and because of lack of education and like, especially like where like my family is like oriented in Colombia, there wasn't a lot of like conversation about mental health, right? So they don't even understand like what was going on. It's like, even with my grandmother, like she has nervios, right? Like nerves, you know, but it's deeper than that, right? But obviously because of that and because of like denial, right, of mental health conditions, there wasn't a lot of help. So just, it wasn't really like I found a lot of support through my Colombian culture, if that makes sense. My parents, yes. But other than that, like, this is not something that a lot of like cousins I could discuss with or anything like that. Like, it's just something that's kept, you know, kind of under the rug, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, are you overcoming all these symptoms or these conditions now in the present time? Mm-hmm. How are you dealing with all that? I mean, you're talking about support medication, psychiatrists, etc. How do you feel about all these things that you are doing to overcome your conditions?
Yeah, so I definitely feel like I'm such in a stable place in my life. And like I told you, I have been 8 years in remission, right? So it's something that doesn't happen. And I had to put in the work, right? Like when it comes to like alcohol, I don't drink alcohol. I don't like the taste, but I can't drink alcohol. I have to sleep at least 6 hours a night. I have to take my medication every night. And things like that. Like I have to, like when you have a condition, you have to learn how to manage it, right? So learning how to manage those kinds of things. And I've overcome a lot. Like to this day, a lot of people aren't aware that I have this, right? Like if you see me like on social media or if you see me in real life, like they're like, whenever we form a connection, it's like, no, like I actually have been diagnosed bipolar. They're like, what? I would never have guessed, right? Because I have it so managed. And it's a lot because of the help that I received and a lot because I found medication that works for me, right? Based on my body, my mind, everybody's different, right? So, and I will say based on medications, I have been stable on two medications my whole life, but now that I'm reaching, you know, that I am older when it comes to like long-term effects, right, of medications, I have had discussions with my doctor about switching and taking that step because, for example, like last summer, one of the medications I take or took, Risperdal, for, you know, it is used to treat, you know, a lot of the antipsychotic, you know, the depression, things like that, mania. It had an effect where, you know, my doctor called me and was like, are you lactating? And, you know, when we talk about that, that's not normal for someone who is not, you know, pregnant, right? So that is something that we had to have discussion because I have been, you know, I'm on this medication now for like 10 plus years, right? So actually last week, I actually had a, you know, a conversation about like switching off of this medication and coming off of one that's actually not not affect like kidneys or it could lead to renal failure of extended amount of time, right? Because that is something that we have to talk about, right? Medications do have side effects, right? For example, I shake, like not to the level of like, you know, I don't have Parkinson's or anything like that, but I started I shake a lot or you know, things like that, but it's manageable. So for me, I have found what works for me.
Right. Yeah. Well, that is something that we already talk about in one of the episodes in the podcast about the side effects of medications and how they lead to something else. And then you have to take more medication for that other side effect and gone. And, you know, it's an ongoing thing.
Right.
Have you ever heard about alternative medicine like psilocybin and something else?
Yes, I have. I have heard of that.
Mm-hmm. And?
And just based on my stability and how I've been stable on this medication for so long and I haven't had any extreme side effects or anything like that and it's been manageable, I haven't wanted to like take that risk, if that makes sense, because what I've known has worked for me.
Okay.
And so alternative medicine, I know alternative things like that, I'm more, I guess, medical based in that aspect where I know what works for me. And you're right, like a medication has to replace another medication, but it's just been what's worked for me.
Yeah.
And I don't think that, especially with the diagnosis I carry, like maybe I remember one of your episodes, like you were talking about another diagnosis, right? But maybe like this level, like bipolar, is not something that I want to risk in like trying another kind of, you know, alternative. Yeah. At least not right now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It has to take some time to come to the conclusion that you may want to try alternative medicines or something like that. Yeah. Now you're working on helping people with mental health conditions. What are you doing and why did you decide to do this?
Yeah, so I'm a social worker first, so I did 4 years at UNC Charlotte social work, and then I did my master's 2 years after that. And then after that, I've now gotten my therapeutic license. So I'm a therapist, mental health clinician. It's so funny because when I have Spanish speaking clients and they don't really know what a therapist is or a licensed clinical social worker associate, that's the technical title. So a lot of them say, are you like psicóloga, like a psychologist? And so I kind of explain a little bit about the difference. But basically, I knew I wanted to help people going into college, but I just didn't know where I fit. Based on my parents, I learned from their experience. I didn't want to go into med field, sorry, Dad, but I wanted something with psychology, something with helping people. I've always loved that. So I started social work just allowed way more options than psychology and like the field wise. So I did social work and I started with like internship in foster care, and then I did an internship in behavioral health at the hospital. And so finally led me to actually being a therapist. So in this day and age, I have clients that I see with actually mental health conditions that are related. So like anxiety, depression, OCD, bipolar, all of this. And I help them manage their symptoms. I do psychotherapy, helping them with that aspect. And the reason I chose to do this is because I wanted to help people, but I wanted to use my journey. And one day I'd like to write a book on this, right? Let's start with a podcast, but be able to really make an impact on not just like the clients I see, but a system level, right? So I'm a bilingual clinician, and there's such a need for therapists that are bilingual, that speak Spanish or English or another language. And so I have seen just in the 2 years that I've been in practice so far, such a huge impact in like the rewarding factor of this field, right? Because you don't go into this field for money, right? But you go into this field for the rewarding aspect of it and what it provides you at the end of the day. And so I'm really happy with my job. And I've always said it's more of a calling, because I've used my journey. I don't ever mention my specifics in, you know, sessions, but I have a lot of empathy. And I have, I believe, you know, a welcoming aura that allows patients to be vulnerable in this space, safe space.
In your experience as a social worker and dealing with mental health conditions and people looking for help, how are Latinos reacting to mental health conditions here, in specific in Charlotte? Are you having a lot of them coming to you looking for help?
Yes. So I actually currently, I work in Gastonia. So it's kind of funny. I live in Charlotte, but work in Gastonia in a private practice. It's actually called New Hope Counseling and Wellness. And I am the Spanish clinician there. And in Gastonia, there's not a lot of bilingual clinicians, so Spanish speaking. So I have a waiting list of people that need to be seen. And so just that says enough in itself that there is such a need for Spanish-speaking clinicians, because it's just not the same. You know, it's impossible to have therapy with someone who doesn't speak Spanish and English. It's just unethical at that point. So being able to provide them like full Spanish sessions, it really makes a difference. Like the need is there for sure.
And do you think that in your own experience, now that you're helping other people, do you think at some point we can, remove or do something with all this stigma about mental health conditions and how the kind of hell we go through with this, and have some more people to share their stories?
Yeah, you know, I hope that me coming on here is something that allows for other people to want to speak on their journeys, because everybody's different, and everybody faces this journey different with mental health or, you know, mental hell. Because I tell you, I have been through hell and back. I have. You know, sometimes I'm like, wow, Lord, like, you really got me standing here, and, you know, I made it. But recognizing, you know, how just talking about this, like, this is a huge step. Like, your podcast is a huge step. People are going to hear this and going to recognize they're not alone. And I always, you know, when we do psychoeducation with my clients in session, there's that stigma we have to break before even beginning session, right? When they are able to talk about what's going on, and recognizing that mental health, like, it's a condition, just like someone who has a physical condition, you know, like, let's say someone has diabetes and it's insulin, you know, someone who has a diagnosis like bipolar depression, they need to be receive proper treatment, right? Whatever that may be, that's best for them.
It is very I don't even know how to call it, but we're trying to just create awareness in our societies, for people to learn that they are not alone. There are a lot of people like you, like me, dealing with depression, so many things, and we need to be validated.
Yes.
And we need to validate other people's conditions, and just to stop that stigma. People have to come forward and express what's going on with their lives.
Yes, and recognizing that a diagnosis doesn't have to limit or define you to the extent that people think it does, right? you know, just because I have this diagnosis of bipolar one, and right now it's officially bipolar one affective intermission because I have been in remission for 8 years, but still there, it doesn't go away, right? And anxiety, it doesn't have to limit me. No, I go to work, I drive, I do what I have to. I'm just, we're regular people, we're human, and we deserve empathy, we deserve validation, we deserve to know that we're not alone.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that people have, society in general, must understand that having a mental health condition is just something that we have to deal with, and we just need to be validated and be part of society and not being called, you are just crazy, you just need a vacation and that's it, and there's nothing wrong with you.
Right.
So it's something more than that.
Yes, very true. And this is the first step to do so. So I thank you for inviting me on your podcast.
Well, Nidia, thank you very much for being here with us and sharing your journey through your mental health conditions. I'm sure it's going to help a lot of people listening to the podcast. And if you can share this podcast with your friends,
of course,
clients, patients, or I don't know, co-workers, anyone else, please do that, and so we can create awareness about what's going on.
Yes, I will, for sure.
Okay, Nia, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much, Carlos.
Okay, bye.
Bye.